Straight Talk with MJ. I'm your host, Michelle Jeanette. Thank you for joining me once again. Today I have a very special guest, a local lady I met in getting involved in one of our grassroots groups here in the county. And we're going to be talking about something very important to our area, but it really just kind of highlights the fact that when you do show up and get involved in your local elections and your local government, how you can make a difference. And when you work together with people of like mind, and how that can affect the local communities also. But I just want to remind everyone, this podcast, I started it off 3 years ago with the idea in mind that I would touch on current events from biblical worldview, but always with the effort to explain the true history of our country with true historical facts, stories, data, just interesting information, if you will, of our founding, of our just the history of this wonderful nation we call America, the United States of America. And so along the way, I've learned about the Constitution and things that I've never studied in school, and took Constitution class with Patriot Academies done by Rick Green and the Barton father and son team with wallbuilders.com. And I learned the biblical foundations of this nation and how the current education system absolutely does not teach the truth about our history. So it was always on my heart to share that. One of the things I learned just in the last few years was how God instituted first family government, and then civil government, and then church government. Of course, the family government was first instituted with Adam and Eve, and then the civil government, I don't know if you have ever read this or understood this, but our representative constitutional republic was based on the scripture, Exodus 18, I guess starting in verse 17, 18, that area. And Moses is trying to deal with the million or so Hebrews, or more than that, just the thousands of issues that come up with having that many people. And his father-in-law is, you know, telling him, you can't handle all this by yourself. You need help. And so here's what God teaches him to do through his father-in-law. And it says, you should continue to be the people's representative before God, bringing their disputes to him. Teach them God's decrees and give them his instructions. Show them how to conduct their lives. He was talking to Moses doing that. And here's how we do our representative republic. This is verse 21 of Exodus 18. But select from all the people some capable, honest men who fear God and hate bribes. Appoint them as leaders over groups of 1,000, 100, 50, and 10. They should always be available to solve the people's common disputes, but have them bring the major cases to you. Let the leaders decide the smaller matters themselves. They will help you carry the load, making the task easier. So obviously we see that in our system of government here with the locality, with towns, cities, counties, and then states. And then the states are sovereign. In our government, states are sovereign, and the federal government is there for specific limited reasons. And of course, now the federal government is completely outgrown, gone way beyond the boundaries of the Constitution. That's another subject. So that being, the getting involved in local is the best way to have good government, because you can locally, you can know the people that are running a lot better than you can even at state level, and especially at the federal level. So when I speak when we talk today about Marion, she is really inspirational because she came here from another state after COVID started, and you'll hear her story a little bit about that. And just, you know, happened to come to East Tennessee and wanted to get involved and started going and started finding out certain things, and it just came from there. And she has been of vital importance to the local grassroots group, Empowered Jefferson, keeping us informed because she attends a lot of the county meetings and city meetings and that kind of thing. But before I start with her interview, I just wanted to share a little bit of history. I'll do that at the beginning. And then our interview will end, and that'll be the end of the episode. So always follow me at straighttalkwithmj.net. And I publish these on my website, these episodes. And then I will also share them on social media, different social media platforms, and also through the Empowered Jefferson groups and the other groups that are available. So today I'm just going to touch on three short stories of women who, in their own way, made a big, big difference to the circumstances of the time. And this is Women in the American Revolution. It's a book I bought. And there's just a couple of stories I want to highlight. One is my all-time favorite story I remember from growing up about the lady. They call or dubbed her Molly Pitcher. That really wasn't her name, and it was maybe have been based on more than one woman. But the reason it became Molly Pitcher is the men would, in battle, would not know the women's names in particular. So they would just, in general, holler Molly. And then Pitcher. They needed a pitcher of water, either for cooling the cannon off or to refresh them in the hot summer sun while they were in battle or something like that. And Molly Pitcher was one of my favorite characters. And it's based on Mary Ludwig Hayes McCauley, also known as Molly Pitcher. She carried pitcher after pitcher of cool water. Okay, this isn't a tap water where you run to the sink, turn it on, and run back with a bottle of water. No, this is getting water probably from a local creek because you're in the middle of battle in big buckets, probably on some sort of yoke that you hang on your shoulders, or maybe not. It could be just by hand with the buckets, but big gallons of buckets, okay? So she's carrying these pitcher of cool water for the artillerymen and the wounded at the Battle of Monmouth on June 28th, 1778. So right in the middle of June, of summer. Joseph Plum Martin, a soldier, later wrote that she also helped to serve one of the cannons as follows, and this is what a soldier wrote about her. He said, while in the act of reaching for a cartridge and having one of her feet as far before the other as she could, in other words, her feet were spread wide apart because she was working real hard, a cannon shot from the enemy passed directly between her legs without doing any other damage than carrying away all the lower part of her petticoat. Looking at it with apparent unconcern, she observed that it was lucky it did not pass a little higher, for in that case it might have carried away something else and continued her occupation. She made a joke of it, and she kept right on working. There's stories of other women who did that, whose husband fell, and she jumped in to help man the cannon that he was doing, and she herself was injured, and she actually ended up getting, her name was Margaret Corbin, and she was wounded and never fully recovered after she jumped in to help do what her husband was doing, and she was the first woman to receive a pension from Congress. So that's the one story of that. Another one is something you may not know about Mrs. George Washington, and that the thing I really love about where I live is we live in Dandridge, and Dandridge is, I think, the only town named after Martha Dandridge Custis Washington, George Washington's wife. And it's also the second oldest town in Tennessee, I believe established in 1783. So before the Constitution was finished, but right after the Revolutionary War was over, that this was founded. So here's a description of Mrs. Washington, because she followed. She was a resident in military camps throughout the war, following the war camps and following her husband. And here is a description by one of the women in the army camp in Morristown, New Jersey, not Morristown, Tennessee, in 1779. And here's the letter as follows. Well, I will honestly tell you, I never was so ashamed in all my life. You see, we three wives thought we would visit Lady Washington, and as she was said to be so grand a lady, we thought we must put on our best bibs and bands. So we dressed ourselves in our most elegant ruffles and silks, and were introduced to her ladyship. And don't you think we found her knitting and with a speckled check apron up on? She received us very graciously and easily, but after the compliments were over, she resumed her knitting. There we were, without a stitch of work and sitting in state, but General Washington's lady with her own hands was knitting stockings for herself and husband. And that was not all. In the afternoon, her ladyship took occasion to say, in a way that we could not be offended at, that it was very important at this time that American ladies should be patterns of industry to their countrywomen, because the separation from the mother country will dry up the sources whence many of our comforts have been derived. We must become independent by our determination to do without what we cannot make ourselves. Whilst our husbands and brothers are examples of patriotism, we must be patterns of industry. What a great attitude to have. And that was how a lot of them were patriotic. A lot of the women were patriotic that way. Some of them even dressed as men, believe it or not, so they could go fight. There was a few that they know of historically that did that. The last story, and then we'll get into my interview with Marion, and is about Mrs. Murray. And in September of 1776, after British General Howe's smashing defeat of the Americans under General Putnam at the Battle of Long Island, the colonial army was in retreat with the enemy hot on their heels, barely 2 miles behind them. Historian Charles Coffin described the retreat as follows. General Washington sent a messenger to Putnam. Evacuate immediately, was the order. The only way of escape left open was up the shore of the Hudson, along cart paths, for the British were already in possession of the Boston Road. General Putnam did not know the way, but fortunately he had a young officer for an aide who knew every path and byway, Aaron Burr. General Putnam started. There was one brigade in a little fort which the Americans had named Bunker Hill. Major Burr rode up to it. Why are you lingering here for? Why don't you retreat? He shouted. We cannot retreat. The British have possession of the road. We will stay here and hold the fort, said General Knox. You can't hold it in 10 minutes. You have no water, no provisions. There is no place where the troops can be sheltered from the bombs. The British will throw in shells and make it a slaughter pen, said Burr. It will be madness to attempt to retreat, Knox replied. I can guide you. I know every cowpath, he said. They trusted him and went up on the run, down through the fields to the Hudson, then through the woods along narrow paths, and so escaped. Just about the time that General Putnam started, British General Howe and General Clinton, having compelled Washington to retreat, rode west halfway to the Hudson and drew up at the house of Mr. Murray. It was a delightful mansion with a lawn and graveled walks in front, a greenhouse and rustic seats. Mrs. Murray received them courteously, and it occurred to her that if she could entertain them for a while, it might be of some service to General Washington. She invited them in, told the servants to prepare a lunch, and entertained them so charmingly that they forgot all about affairs outside. She kept them fully 2 hours, and while they were sipping Mrs. Murray's wine and listening to her engaging conversation, General Putnam with his 4,000 men was slipping past them not a half a mile away. General Howe was greatly chagrined when he learned that Putnam had escaped. Very clever of Mrs. Murray. Now, why do I read these simple little stories about some of the women in our history? Because it takes just one act, one decision, one choice to do something for your local community, however small it may seem. And Marion is just an example of the small steps she took to start going to meetings and how she learned things and how she started sharing it, and how it became more and more people became involved, and now she's making changes and helping our local community. So we're going to listen to this conversation. It's very important because a local, the TVA is trying to bring in, well, they will be bringing in a battery plant for backup battery electricity, if electricity kind of goes down or for extra electricity. And she's explaining how this happened in the county, what we can do maybe to curtail some of the dangerous things about this, and as citizens, what we can do locally to get involved. One, of course, is to start going to county meetings, but I would encourage you also to join in the grassroots group like Empowered Jefferson. You can find them on Facebook, for one. Empowered Jefferson County is the name of the Facebook page, and start following them. They try to keep everyone apprised of the local issues, from schools to county commissions to battery plants to taxes, all that kind of thing going on locally. And it just gives you an idea of what you can do as a group. You can accomplish a whole lot more when you work together. So I wanted to share this little interview and conversation with Marion, and she is full of information since she has been doing this since September, digging into this topic specifically. I will also be putting some links in the podcast episode website part of it, and you can follow those links. It will have the actual resolution about the battery plants and a couple other informational pieces that you might want to read and follow up on and do some more research. Definitely one of the things you can start doing is going to these meetings and get involved in a group like Empowered Jefferson, because you can do a lot more in a group. So follow them on Empowered Jefferson County on Facebook, and don't forget to follow me at straighttalkwithmj.net and listen and sign up to get the emails. When I put out a new episode, you'll get an email notification, and that way you won't ever miss an episode. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Marion and learn a lot about what's going on in our specific county, and get involved where you live. Find a grassroots group and get involved and make a difference. It's upon us. The duty is ours. Results are God's. It's what John Quincy Adams says. We can't handle, we don't have any control over the results of what happened, but we do have control over what our duty is to get involved. So let's get involved and let's make a difference, and let's do that for this country. So take a listen and we'll talk again soon. There we go. All right, welcome to Straight Talk with MJ. I'm your host, Michelle Jeanette, and I'm here today with Marion Knight, and we're going to be talking about something that's affecting our county here locally in East Tennessee, and it's probably something most people in our county aren't aware of, and so I wanted to get this information out to you as quick as we could, because there is a meeting coming up that we'll talk about here soon, but Marion Knight is newer to the county. So Marion, thank you for coming in, and just want to get a little bit of background of where you're from and what where you came from and what you're doing and what you did and what brought you here to East Tennessee. So, in really quick,
trying to give you the Reader's Digest version. I'm Marion Knight. For 67 years, I lived in either New Hampshire or Massachusetts, and I had the need to escape because COVID drove everyone crazy, and they were doing silly things, and all of my protests to the local government went on deaf ears. So I decided I needed to move, and accidentally ended up in Tennessee, where I'd never been before in my life.
Wow.
And I've lived here for the last 2 years. I truly do believe that God brought me here for a purpose for myself. Yes. And maybe something good that I can do in the county.
So you were involved kind of speaking out up there before you even came down here?
Only once COVID came.
Right.
Most of my life I spent trying to avoid any government contact.
Yeah.
I just wanted the government to leave me alone.
Which is what a lot of Americans feel like until they got intrusion. So you go to the meeting. So what started you in going into that? Just the whole COVID era?
Well, when I moved here, I decided I wanted to find out something about my county.
Sure.
And So I went online and I found the county website and the Dandridge website, which is where I live. So I looked to see agendas for meetings and minutes of past meetings so I could see what people were interested in, and found nothing.
Nothing.
So I decided that I had to find out when meetings were so that I could go to them. And because I'm old and my memory is not what it used to be, I had to take notes so I could remember what happened. So slowly, over the last 2 years, I've found ways to find out when meetings are.
Yes.
And I attend meetings and I take notes.
Well, I can tell you, our listeners for sure, Marion has been vital in our group, in the group that's locally a grassroots group of Empower Jefferson, just getting that information to us about when meetings are, because like you said, it's hard to find that information. So Marion has been great at getting that info to us. So, and one of the things you found out one of the meetings was kind of shocking, which was BESS.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, what is that? So you started explaining it to us, and we were kind of, all the group were kind of shocked at what is the county was bringing in without anybody knowing, really.
That's for sure.
So what is BESS?
Well, last September, when I went to the Board of Zoning Appeals meeting, there was an item on the docket that said BESS, B-E-S-S. And I didn't know what it was, so I went to the meeting and found out that it stands for Battery Energy Storage Systems, which is a facility that is comprised of many batteries, in our case, lithium-ion batteries, that provide power during times of peak use. They don't actually generate power. They just store power. They're just a giant rechargeable battery complex.
Right. And what were they planning on bringing in? Like how many? Like what size? First of all, what size are these batteries and how many did they want to bring in?
The proposed project, which is not yet approved. They're still working on the rules that will apply to projects. The proposed project is for a 250 million watt facility, which is comprised of 6 million lithium ion batteries in 200 storage containers.
Oh my goodness. How many batteries?
6 million.
6 million. Holy cats. Okay, so, and you found out that was going where?
In Piedmont.
Piedmont.
Next to the TVA substation. There's a TVA substation and an AEC substation next to each other.
Okay.
Near the intersection of Lafayette and Bays Mountain Road. And that is where the developer has an option to purchase about 25 acres of land, and that's where they want to put it, next to the TVA substation, to gather
energy
when there's excess produced,
right,
and then to provide it back to the system when it is needed during peak use hours.
So this would be TVA driven, but it was a contractor,
yes,
that they
the
brought,
TVA
brought in or
hired
something.
Gotcha. The contractor.
And so these batteries, what? So when you found out about that at the meeting, had they already approved this development?
No.
Okay, okay.
It's just proposed.
Okay.
What they found that they had to do first was decide whether this was an appropriate use on agricultural forestry land, which is the A1 zone.
So that's kind of been our issue with a few things in this county, is how they're using A1
mm-hmm.
agricultural zoning.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had other issues, I think, with what RV parks and stuff like that.
Oh, there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So the battery thing, you decided to look into what exactly a battery plant, what it was,
mm-hmm.
and what did you find out about all that?
All I did was type onto my computer, lithium ion batteries first, and all I saw was fire after fire after fire. And then I typed in BESS, and found lots of reports and explosions and fires at other facilities.
And what happened, like, we've seen lithium batteries in the EV cars, mm-hmm. and that's even up one. Locally, mm. up White on pine. The interstate, it burned and burned and it couldn't put it out. And mm-hmm. so what will happen with 6 million batteries?
It's an excellent question.
So you started asking questions at meetings? You spoke up?
Yes, I started asking questions of the developer. Actually, the developer, I like them, because they're actually more willing to talk to me than anybody who works in the county.
Okay.
And they also have a fire expert group called ESRG. Uh-huh. That was also very open to answering questions. They've been very transparent.
That's good.
I give them credit for that.
Okay.
They, of course, don't want to do everything that I want them to do because it would cost money.
Right. What is the number one issue, though, with the batteries, the danger? The top issues that you found?
I have two top issues. One involves danger.
Yeah.
And that is that lithium ion batteries do tend to catch on fire. Those fires cannot be put out. They have to just burn until they're out. And then they can spontaneously reignite, as the White Pine Fire Department found out a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
And the true danger, other than the unknown chemicals that could be released during these fires, which the developer has said, oh, no, that's not an issue. I'm sure they're putting a good spin on it. The danger is, there's a double danger. The first danger is that once the batteries catch on fire, they heat up. They have to let them burn, but an overheated battery can explode. So they have to be cooled by water, just a spray of water, that will minimize the possibility that they will explode. Now, if there's 6 million batteries and even one catches on fire, if it does explode, that's going to be a disaster for this county.
Yeah.
And the people that live nearby, we probably... You know, we could lose our electrical grid.
Right.
Because it's next to two substations.
Substations.
And the other issue that is dangerous is that sparks can be released from burning batteries. And if they go beyond the cleared out area around the battery storage, they could start wildfires.
Sure.
And we have plenty of trees around here.
Yeah.
And I don't want to turn into California or Canada with the wildfires.
No kidding. So what is the one thing, I know we talked about them not even having a hydrant at the property that you've addressed to what, the committee?
I've been yelling at people for months. There should be, according to the fire marshal who in Chandler, Arizona, where they experienced a lithium ion battery fire, but theirs was a much smaller facility that burned for weeks. He said that there definitely needs to be water on site. Now, whether that's in a large storage container or a hydrant, I don't really have a preference. I shouldn't say that. I prefer a hydrant because you don't run out of water in a hydrant.
Right.
But no hydrant, no water is required in the BESS resolutions.
Okay. From the county.
From the county.
Right.
Even over my objections.
Right.
And it's kind of like they believe the developer who's saying, you know, we've tested these in the test situation. We haven't been able to make a thermal runaway. If there's a fire, it's contained to one or two cells, and you know that's not dangerous. But I consider a hydrant or water to be like an insurance policy.
Sure.
Why wouldn't What are we going to wait till there's an emergency and then say, oh, maybe we should have required water in the resolutions?
Or it's like getting homeowner's insurance after a fire.
Right. I mean, why would you get insurance after your house had the
fire? Nobody will cover that. So what's coming up? Anything else that I missed that you
Well, my
to
other big problem is with the current resolutions is that no notification is required of the residents who will live in the area of the battery energy storage system. I believe that there should be a certified letter sent out to people within a 1 mile buffer zone, which is what they're doing in Gilbert, Arizona already.
Right.
That tells people what's coming so that they can participate in the site plan and they'll know what is happening in their own neighborhood. The people who live near these could face a loss of value in their property. They could face increased homeowner insurance rates, and they could they will be the ones that find out if there are long-term health effects associated with living near a BESS. So I think that in good conscience, they need to be notified individually. They should not have to look in the standard banner in the public notice section.
Especially if they thought they were getting property out in the middle of the country and not near anything, raising their kids or their farm or whatever. You don't know what that's going to affect.
Yes, I've been told that, you know, it's on you when you buy your property to make sure what could be built around you. And so if you look at your property and you find out that it's next to what's zoned as agricultural forestry land, you would not expect to see some of the things that are allowed in agricultural forestry.
Right.
So I think that that is on the county.
Right. Is there a specific committee or is it the whole county commission that is kind of bringing this to the county?
Well, it started with the Board of Zoning Appeals.
Zoning, okay.
Then the county regional planners developed the rules.
Okay.
And now the final approval has to be by the 21 county commissioners.
21, okay. So anything else that we need to know? I know you had some points.
The hearing.
The hearing, okay.
The hearing's coming.
Coming up is... when is it?
July 10th, okay. Which is next Monday, at 6:30 at the courthouse in downtown Dandridge. You could come early and listen to the budget meeting that's going to be happening at 5:30. But I would say whether you agree with having a BESS in the county or not, you should come and listen. I'm sure the developer will be there. I will be speaking. I'm sure that the developer will have their fire people and there'll be questions asked. So, you know, knowledge is power.
Yeah. And we'll be able, citizens be able to speak, you think?
I believe so.
Yeah.
There have been other public hearings and citizens have been allowed to speak. The very first one that I heard of ever that you had to sign up to speak was
that last one.
The last one that involved the tax increase.
Right, right. I know, like, for instance, idea that you don't know what the outcome could be or the consequence could be to the surrounding people. My husband's an insurance adjuster, so he travels the country after storms. And he's a catastrophic one. So he goes in when there's so many claims that the local adjusters can't handle it. Hail, tornadoes, hurricanes, that kind of thing. He always works.
Lithium ion batteries.
Who knows? But I remember his one time, I didn't go with him on this trip, but he was climbing up on a roof, and I don't remember it was a mobile home or a smaller home, and it had a metal roof, and they were under those big power lines. And he always wears these shoes called Cougar Paws because they have like, it's kind of like a felt, like what roofers use to kneel on when they put the roof on so he won't slide. And it's really good to get on roofs with. And he had his gloves on and everything. And he put his ladder up and got on and put his hand on it and it shocked him. Because this, just from being under the power lines, those big ones, it, you know, electrified. The roof was electrified.
Because it was metal?
Because it was metal and was just near and under those big power lines. So you don't know what that kind of, things you can't even see that can affect the local people around that plant. Things like that. I bet they those people didn't even know that their roof was electrified. You know, because they had a metal roof under the big electric towers or whatever. So, the next July 10th, Monday, the courthouse in Dandridge, which is a really cool courthouse. It's like a museum.
Yeah, it has a museum.
Yeah, it has a museum in it. I love it. And we can be in there and maybe get our voices heard or find out and do some information. I'm going to put, is there some link you can send me to put on with this podcast about this? Something that you found online, maybe at one specific website, or do you have anything like that?
There's a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff.
Actually, the link I'll send to you is the one that the developer has out there, so you can see what they have in mind.
Okay, okay.
They're going to call it Dumplin Valley Energy Storage.
Dumplin Valley.
Yes, because it sounds cute.
Yeah.
Just like Bess, kind of sounds like a nice person. Oh, and can I just mention a couple of more things?
Yeah.
Okay, so as part of my research, I went online to look for the largest BESS,
okay,
lithium ion BESS, on Earth. And the top three lithium ion, now we're not talking about solar storage here, we're talking about lithium ion batteries exclusively, are in Moss Landing in California, Victorian Big Battery in Australia, and Elkhorn, also in California. All three of those facilities have had at least a fire or an overheating incident or both.
Wow.
And so 100% of the largest facilities have had an incident. So the developer is going to come in and say, well, we have the newest updated version of the Tesla Megapack 2 XL 24, whatever it's called. These things can't catch on fire. They're not going to explode. There's all kinds of things built into the batteries that they're perfectly safe. Nothing bad can ever happen. So I like to look at what has happened, and I'm sure that the batteries at Moss Landing and Victorian Big Battery and Elkhorn were all Underwriter Lab approved, just like they're saying the batteries they want to use are Underwriter Lab approved.
Right.
So I'm more of a person who wants to protect against the things that people say it is impossible to happen.
Like the Titanic, it won't sink.
It won't sink. Asbestos doesn't hurt anybody. Uh-huh, it's really good for you.
And some
there's plenty of things.
Yeah.
There's plenty of things that we've been told could
safe
not
and
possibly hurt you that can.
Yes.
So I prefer to be safe than sorry.
Yes. Will you be speaking?
I will be speaking.
Okay. All right.
If they let me.
Right.
I will be speaking. I have my 3-minute speech prepared. And I'm going to point out that hydrants are required at many other commercial facilities, including one at the last regional planning meeting, when they insisted that a truck stop at exit 412 have a hydrant, even though there was one across the street.
Okay.
So why there and not here?
Right. So, and we've learned also, we were talking about that earlier, is people forgot that the people are the sovereign. They're supposed to be, we elect them to work for us and not to pull the wool over our eyes and do things behind our back. So that's kind of what our group has done, and you've done tremendously, is getting this information out to us, like I said. And so we want to encourage everyone, we're going to get this out to our group and share it this week. Encourage everyone to show up and at least show up and pay attention
just
to
be
it
there
and be there and let them know, that way they know we're watching, and if the least that we're paying attention.
And if you want this facility, show up. Sure, yeah. And I'm sure there are people out there that do want it because the TVA conveniently had rolling blackouts last December on the 23rd and the 24th because they're closing the coal-fired plants.
Right.
Because they don't like fossil fuels.
Right. Well, and they already, I had heard from some of the ladies in the group that they were putting out notices about this last week, it being hot, to conserve your air conditioning. I'm like, it's been the coolest June that we've had in years. We haven't had a lot of hot weather this year, so that's just kind of crazy. So thank you, Marion, for coming and telling us about this, because that's definitely something we need to know about. And we will be at the meeting. I will be at the meeting, and hopefully we can get more people there and speaking up and holding our officials accountable and letting them know that, reminding them, like our Tennessee State Constitution says, we are here to instruct them in what they should be doing. So hopefully we can do that. I appreciate you coming and explaining that to us.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Yes.
I totally appreciate it. And it is scary to speak in front of these people. So, you know, if you don't want to speak, that's fine. Just come
yeah
and be there
yeah yeah
thank you
thank you Mary.